Today is Tuesday, March 31st, 2020, the Tuesday of the fifth week of Lent. And finally, it's the last day of March, which has just kind of seemed like this month has dragged on forever. I was just thinking before I started to record that it's the last day of the month. It's also the last day of the quarter, financially. Like, if I were still working at National City or BNY Mellon, this would be an absolutely crazy, insane, like, you better show up early and you know you're going to stay late kind of day. And, you know, as a priest, like, you don't really, any day could be like that. You have no idea what's going to happen, but really most of the days aren't like that. And with the current situation, I have only like one thing I'm responsible for today. I have to walk over to the church a little bit later and say Mass, and no one's here, so it'll take at most 20 minutes. It's just like, it's a weird turn of events, and I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I kind of do miss the bank, but I'm glad that I do what I do. It's weird, right? This whole situation is just weird for all of us, but hey. It is what it is, I guess, and we're gonna find our way through it. And that is kind of a natural segue into today's readings. It's funny how sometimes you just start talking and talk yourself into where you need to be. Most of the time I talk myself into trouble. But the first reading today, especially, I like this first reading. Because this first reading makes me think of a feast that we're going to celebrate in September. On September 14th, actually, the feast of the... Oh God, what do we call it now? The Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross. It used to be called the Feast of the Triumph of the Cross, and now we call it the Exaltation of the Cross, which is probably a better translation of what the feast is actually called in Latin. And I suppose it makes maybe a little more sense to use exaltation rather than triumph. So, either way. But this first reading is always used on that particular feast day as well. Because it's so very clearly is a prefiguring of the cross, that whenever one of the Israelites who is bitten by one of these serpents looks at this bronze seraph serpent that Moses has mounted on a pole, which would be in the shape of a cross, when he looks at this, he lives, and the venom no longer has any control over his body or whatever. Like, it looking at this image saves the person. And obviously, we know that our salvation comes through what Jesus did on the cross. And so when you look at this cross, you are at least reminded of your salvation. And if you had certainly... God, could you imagine what it would have been like to have been at the crucifixion? I mean, it would have been awful. But like, to be able to go back and see and witness it now, knowing everything that we know and believing everything that we believe, that might make it more awful. I don't know. I mean, there's nothing good about the crucifixion, except everything's good about it. That's the paradox of the cross. I think that's why I like that feast, and why that just the image resonates with me so much, that you have this event that happens because of the fear of the scribes and the Pharisees, and yet Jesus approaches it with tremendous courage. You have this event that happens because of the jealousy of the scribes and the Pharisees. And so Jesus makes this perfect self-offering, this self-gift. You have this event that happens because of the hate of the scribes and the Pharisees. And so Jesus does it out of, you know, complete love. He's treated like a common criminal, and like he's accursed because he's hung on a tree outside of the city. And yet we know him to be not only the just judge, but the king of the universe. You know, buried in a poor man's grave, he's also the thing that holds all things into being. It's a total paradox, and I like that, because you're not going to have a good life of faith if you can't be at least a little bit comfortable with paradoxes, because that's what faith is, I think, in many ways. It makes you turn things upside down sometimes, and it brings meaning to even the darkest moments, and it can bring light into the darkest moments. And anyway, but let's talk about this actual reading and just a couple more things that are going on there. So, again, when you're in the Old Testament, context is everything, especially when we're jumping around like we do during Lent. And so here we are in the book of Numbers, chapter 21. From Mount Hor, the children of Israel set out on the Red Sea Road to bypass the land of Edom. But with their patience worn out by the journey, the people complained against God and Moses, saying, "Why have you brought us up from Egypt to die in this desert where there is no food or water? We are disgusted with this wretched food." Now, there's a whole lot to unpack there, right? There's a lot of things that kind of need to be explained. First of all, we are disgusted with this wretched food. This wretched food being the manna and the quail that God is miraculously sending among the people every night. So now you're being fed, literally being fed with bread from heaven, and you are disgusted by it, and you're calling it wretched food. Think about that for a second. Maybe that's not the way you want to approach that argument. But oftentimes, we look at gifts from God not necessarily as gifts. We look at them as being burdensome or troublesome, or we just fail to recognize the inherent goodness in them. Or maybe we feel like they're not enough for us. Like, oh yeah, God's given me this gift or this talent or this or that, but I want more, I deserve more, I need more. We're never content. And I think that's a very human thing, but I think we also need to work to overcome that. Because it's when we can be truly grateful, so many things change for us. So you've got that going on. Also, like, there's a very good reason why the children of Israel are on the Red Sea Road and they're bypassing the land of Edom. And to get that answer, you have to go back to what's happening in chapter 20 of the book of Numbers, where they want to pass through the land of Edom. But there's a problem with that, right? So beginning in Numbers chapter 20, verse 14, Moses sends messengers to the king of Edom and says, "Listen, we're at the edge of your territory. Please, just let us pass through your land. We'll stick to the road. We're not going to go through anybody's fields or vineyards. We're not going to damage the property. We're not going to drink any well water. We're not going to take anything from you. We're just going to stick on the main road, and we're just going to pass through. And we just want your permission to do that. We won't cause any trouble." And Edom, for whatever reason, says, "No, I don't want you people coming through our land. If you do, we will come at you. We will advance upon you with the sword." And the Israelites came back and said, "No, really, we promise. We will just stick to the highway. Even if the animals drink water, we will pay you for it. Like, we really don't want anything from you. We just want to pass through. It'll be like we were never here." And Edom says, "No, you're not going to pass through." And they send a body of soldiers to, like, kind of guard the border. Like, you're not coming through here. If you try to come through here, you're going to be in a world of hurt. And they would have been. Israel's still fleeing from Egypt. They haven't had time to really kind of coalesce into a nation, let alone like establish an army and weaponize and all these kinds of things. So they know that if they try to go through Edom, it's going to be a massacre. And the safest thing for them to do is to go around it. Now, it's going to be a troublesome journey because now you have to go around this kingdom and it's going to make the journey longer. And it obviously would have been much easier to go straight through Edom. That's why they wanted to do it in the first place. But they realize, okay, they're going to have to go around. And so they're going the way they're going. They're going out by way of the Red Sea on that particular road to stay alive. But they get only a few days into this journey, or maybe a few weeks into this journey. We're not entirely sure how long it is before they start complaining, "You know what? This is awful. Why are you doing this to us?" "Well, I'm doing this to you so you stay alive. Like, I'm you're literally saving your life by making you walk this way." But they can't see the good in it. That, it would have been easier to go through Edom, but God has provided a way. Like, there is another route that we can take, and it's not the most direct, and it's not the way we want to go, and it's not the easiest way. But if you don't do this, you will literally die a tragic and violent death at the hands of people that don't like you. This isn't easy, you're right, but it's keeping you alive. This is the best thing that could happen to you. But sometimes we don't want that, right? We just want the easy way. We want the way that's going to give us, the most pleasure or the least stress or any of those things. And we don't really care what the ultimate cost would be. Now, maybe we would care if the ultimate cost was like our life, but at the same time, we just want things to be whatever's going to be most convenient for us. And here's God putting the Israelites in a situation where this will be the best thing for you. You just have to kind of, you know, deal with a little bit of discipline, as it were, first, and then you can get where you're going. It's like the people that insist that they don't have to socially distance and they should be able to continue their lives exactly the way things were. Like, you're right. It's hard to kind of be in the isolation that we're in, to not be able to be with our coworkers or our classmates or any of those sorts of things. But like, this is keeping us alive, and this is hard, and this is not what we want. We have to do this, or think of what the consequences will be. Often our spiritual lives are the same way. I want this great experience of prayer, and it feels very dry and arid right now. Or I want to know that I have this deep sense of meaning, but right now I just have questions. I want, but what do I need? The Israelites need to make this long journey. What do you need to do? And what is it that God is trying to do for you that you're not recognizing as gift, that you're not being thankful for? As we come up towards the end of this Lenten season, a Lenten season that is going to feel like it's going to continue well past Easter, I think we need to be very cognizant of the gifts he's giving us, because Lent is going to end next week, and Easter is going to happen in a week and a half. And it's going to be hard to miss or it's going to be hard to recognize it this year, but it's still true. And so we need to pray for a metanoia, like a transformation of our hearts right now, so that we can see these things when they happen. Because if we don't see these things, if we're not capable of seeing God at work in our lives, then how are we ever going to do the things that he needs us to do? How are we ever going to really be his disciples? So let's try to pray out of a place of thanksgiving today, and just recognize everything that God has done for us, and maybe not grumble as much as we've been grumbling, but just to be thankful for what we do have, and to realize that his plan is greater than ours, but his plan is always, always good and loving for us. All right, that's all for right now. Say your prayers, wash your hands. I've got a few things, like I said, that I need to do, but I think I will be able to get another recording done later. I shouldn't say that. Every time I say that, nothing happens. But we will see. So, okay. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.